I'll know his mole-covered face when I see it. The two detectives shared a look, and then Detective Vaughn handed Angela the rest of the photos. She went through them quickly, one at a time, laying them face down on the tray in front of her until she got to the photo of Miguel. She would recognize his face anywhere. Angela plunked the photo down for the two men to see. That's Miguel. That's all four. If you have their mugshots, does that mean you have them under arrest? Detective Vaughn nodded.
They were just picked up a couple hours ago. We wanted to make sure we had the right men. From how certain you are, it appears we do.
When is the trial? I want to testify. I want to help put them away forever. Detective Preston smiled at her eagerness.
We'll be in touch and let you know what happens at the arraignment.
He laid his business card down on the tray.
In the meantime, if you have any questions or think of anything else, here's my card.
And mine,
Detective Vaughn said as he laid his down beside it.
A lot of victims are afraid to testify. We're glad to hear that you would be willing.
A short time after they left, Barry stopped in to see how she was doing. It was his second visit. He assured her that the bruises on her face looked better, as did her neck. She didn't know if he was just trying to cheer her up or if he was being honest. Barry was a nice guy, but he wasn't the type who was comfortable expressing sympathy. He didn't know what to do with his hands as he stood beside the bed. Before long, he said he wanted to let her rest, so he didn't stay long. Angela appreciated him stopping in. He told her not to worry about her job, that once she was better, it would be waiting for her. He smiled then and said that she was the best bartender he'd ever had and he wanted her back. The next afternoon, Dr. Song stopped in. It was earlier than she usually came by.
This morning's CT scan looks better, she said. If you feel up to it, we could release you today, but only if you feel up to it. I can tell you, though, that the less time you spend in a hospital, the better.
Angela sat up. I'm good. I'm ready to go home. Dr. Song smiled at Angela's impatience.
I'll send down the release orders, then. A nurse will come by in an hour or two and take out your IV and sign you out.
All right, Angela said, already eager to leave. Thank you for everything you've done for me.
Happy to help, she said with a smile. But I want you to take it easy. No strenuous activity, no physical exertion. It would be best if you got a lot of rest for the next couple weeks. Eat light meals, no aspirin. We'll give you a few pain pills to take home and a prescription for more, but if you feel any increase in abdominal pain, you need to let me know right away.
Angela simply nodded. She didn't want to tell the doctor that she had no intention of taking pain medication. The drugs made her feel sick. She'd rather have the pain than the nausea. By later in the afternoon, she had been unplugged from everything and had signed all the paperwork. Julie brought her a shirt and jeans from the Lost and Found and told her where she had moved her truck into the parking lot. Angela thanked her for all her help and promised to buy her a drink if she stopped into the bar once Angela was back to work. Julie paused for a moment.
Do you remember Carrie, the nurse who worked here? She gave you samples to be taken to the lab not long ago.
I remember her,
Angela said.
I heard about her being abducted.
Julie smiled, even though her eyes watered up.
Somehow, God intervened or something, and they were able to find her body along with the guy who did it. We all wish she was still with us, but at least it's some comfort for her family that they were finally able to give her a proper burial.
I'm so sorry.
After an uncomfortable silence, Angela finally spoke again.
Thank you for taking care of me while I was here.
Julie wiped a tear away, smiled, and rubbed Angela's arm.
Glad to watch over you.
As she left the room to get an orderly with a wheelchair, Angela thought,
You all watch over me, and I watch over all of you.
It's what they did.
That's what Angela did.
Julie finally brought back an orderly with a wheelchair. As they wheeled her to the door,
and then out into the parking lot to her truck. They offered to call someone to drive her or to call her a cab. Angela thanked them, but insisted she was fine. When she carefully climbed into her truck, relieved to be free at last, the first thing she did was check that her gun was still there in the center console. It was right where she'd left it. She drove through town slowly to be sure she wouldn't have to slam on the brakes for anyone. She felt a wave of relief that she had survived the attempt on her life and that she had finally gotten out of the hospital. The four men who had raped her and tried to kill her were finally behind bars. She would rather have them down the hellhole, but at least they were in jail. She hoped they spent the rest of their lives in prison. When she reached the drive up to her cabin, she let the cable drop to the ground so she could drive in. She would have liked to leave it there and simply drive up to the cabin, but she wanted it back across the drive. Her four attackers were in jail, but she didn't want anyone else coming up to her place uninvited. She struggled to pull the cable tight across the drive, but she finally got it locked back on, happy that she would be left alone. 28. Even though it was still light out, Angela went right to bed. She was relieved to finally take off the baggy jeans and shirt from the hospital lost and found, but more than that, it was a relief to be in her own bed and to at last be completely alone. Before climbing into bed, she resisted the temptation to look at herself in the mirror. Several mornings later, when she finally did look in the mirror, it was worse than she had hoped, but it wasn't as bad as she had feared. The bruises had lost their sick-looking deep violet color, but now they were an ugly, dark yellowish-black. The stitches inside her cheeks were a continual annoyance, but they would dissolve as the wounds healed. She was thankful that they hadn't gone all the way through her cheeks, and that she wouldn't have scars across the outside of her face. It was going to be a while, though, before she was in shape to tend bar. After she got dressed and made herself some soup, she went down into the basement. The quiet of the basement was different from the quiet of the house. The basement was deathly quiet. She thought about the killers she had put down the hellhole and promised herself they would not be the last. Angela retrieved another knife from the cabinet and fit its sheath into the pocket in the lining of a new pair of boots that hadn't been covered in blood. She had never known that it was illegal to carry the knife. She had carried the knife because she knew it was illegal to carry a gun. She thought she was taking on an extra risk by carrying a knife instead of a gun in order to stay legal. Since it was illegal to carry the knife, too, that changed everything. Angela went back to the cabinet where the supplies were stored and retrieved her grandfather's inside-the-waistband leather holster for the Walther P-22. She tried the gun in it. It fit like a glove. But that wasn't exactly what she needed. Angela put the leather holster on the counter and used a utility knife to cut off the bottom end of the barrel pocket to make an opening. She screwed on a suppressor and tried putting the gun into the holster. She had to cut away some extra leather until the suppressor fit down through the hole and the gun sat snug in the holster. She undid the button and zipper on her jeans and fit the holster to the inside of the waistband in back. It would stick out and be too visible if she wore it on her hip. Wearing it in the back, she could wear a top to help conceal it. The suppressor made for a long weapon, but she found that with the barrel of the suppressor resting partway down into the crack of her ass, the gun was well concealed. She often wore a short top that showed her midriff when she tended bar. She decided that her cutoffs revealed enough to keep men buying drinks and leaving tips without needing a cropped top as well. A longer top would allow her to carry the gun with the suppressor already attached. Ever since she had killed that first man, who had murdered the girl with red hair and dumped her body in an old cistern in the deserted industrial tract, she knew she had found her calling in life. It seemed like the more men she killed, the more she wanted to kill. It was addicting. Fortunately, She seemed to be a lunatic magnet. Killers were drawn to her like wolves to a lamb. Angela figured that if she was breaking the law carrying the knife, then she might as well carry a gun. Better to break the law than to be murdered. The next time, she wouldn't have to worry about it being out of reach in her truck. Even if she did have a gun on her, she was concerned by how fast those men had gotten control of her. She wasn't sure that even if she had been carrying a gun, she would have been able to get it out fast enough. She wasn't sure yet what she was going to do about that problem. There seemed to be a piece to the puzzle missing. Satisfied with the way the holster fit, Angela collected a few boxes of ammunition and went out to practice. Having the gun holstered at the small of her back added a challenging new dimension to shooting. She would have to get used to drawing it quickly, even with the suppressor attached. That was not going to be easy. It was a trade-off of speed for stealth. First, she needed to master drawing it quickly and then getting off rounds accurately. It didn't matter how fast you could shoot if you missed the target. Her grandfather often told her that you couldn't miss fast enough to save your life. She soon became good at drawing the gun from a concealed position and getting off the first round with dead accuracy. Once she could draw and every round pinged the steel triangle, her confidence grew that having the gun concealed on her would be worthwhile. Her abdomen was finally feeling better, and the bruises were healing. When she went for a checkup, Dr. Song was pleased with her progress. The stitches inside her cheeks were beginning to dissolve, too. Confident she could cover the remaining bruises with makeup, she felt good about going back to work for Barry. To celebrate being alive and going back to work, she dyed her hair a stark platinum blonde with blue tips. Her hair and her cutoffs, showing off her legs, always brought in good tips. For all she knew, maybe the tattoo across her throat did as well. Since she was carrying her gun in the waistband at the small of her back, she had to wear a longer top to cover it. Because the suppressor made it hard to wear her gun when driving, she decided that for now, she would carry the suppressor separately. With no pockets big enough to hide a suppressor, she put it down the inside of her left boot, much the way she did with her knife in the right boot. It wasn't too comfortable, but it worked well enough for the time being. While she was concerned that it was illegal to carry the gun and knife, and doubly illegal to have a suppressor, she was far more realistically concerned about suddenly finding herself looking into the eyes of a killer. That happened far more often than she had ever encountered the police. At least with the four men who had tried to kill her in jail, she wouldn't have to worry about encountering them. Pleased that she was going to be well armed, and just as she was about to leave to bartend, she got a call. She pulled out her phone as she was heading for the front door, keys in hand. "Hello, this is Angela."
"Hi, Miss Constantine. It's Detective Vaughn."
Angela used her shoulder to hold her phone to her ear as she locked the front door. "Have they set a trial date?" The detective cleared his throat.
"I hate having to give you this news, but the charges were dropped, and all four of the men were released."
Angela straightened, keys in hand. For a moment, she couldn't seem to form a thought. "I don't understand. Why would they be released?"
"I'm afraid it was the prosecutor's decision."
At first, Angela felt like she might faint. It took only seconds, though, for rage to take over.
"But I identified them. I said I would testify. You have the DNA evidence they collected at the hospital. It's all in the rape kit." "Rape kits from all over the state are backlogged for years. There's not enough funding to process them. It will be at least 3 years, more likely 4, or maybe even 5 years before they can get to yours for processing and DNA analysis."
"But I'm willing to testify. They have the rope. My blood was at the location. There's a hospital report of what they did to me. None of that has to be processed."
"Look, Miss Constantine, I'm on your side. I'm angry about this, too."
"Oh, yeah? Did those bastards rape you? Did they put a fucking rope around your neck, hang you from a beam, and leave you to strangle to death?
The line was silent for a moment.
Of course not. I realize there is no way I could feel the way you do. I'm just saying that I'm on your side. I wanted those four assholes to go to prison. I was pretty angry when I heard that they'd been released.
Who ordered them released?
John Babington, the assistant district attorney.
In her courier job delivering legal documents, Angela had met John Babington a few times. He was a prick.
Can't you...
There's nothing I can do about it. It's over my head. The reason for my call is to inform you. But more importantly, I wanted to warn you. Those four are out of jail, and since they had intended to kill you, it's possible they could decide to finish the job. I asked if we could provide protection, but since there is no specific threat, the chief said we don't have the manpower.
Angela scanned the surrounding woods. They could be anywhere. Do you have any idea if they left town?
I'm sorry, but I don't. If I get any word on their whereabouts, or if they left town, I will certainly let you know right away.
All right. Thanks, Angela finally said. Her thoughts were already elsewhere, already on that pompous prick, John Babington. One time in the hall of the municipal building, when no one else was around, John Babington had put his hand on her ass. It wasn't tentative or fleeting. It was deliberate and forceful. In the same way she handled drunks in the bar, she simply glided out of range without making an issue of it as she handed him the documents she was delivering for one of her attorney clients. He had flashed her a smile that was both lewd and condescending at the same time. Instead of going to work at the bar, Angela called Barry and told him she would be a little late, that she had to make a stop first. 29. After calling Barry, Angela drove straight into downtown Milford Falls. The whole way, she kept trying to think of a reason why they would have let the men go. It didn't make any sense. These weren't petty shoplifters. These men had beat her senseless and left her hanging by a rope, fully expecting she was going to die. Having been to the municipal building before, Angela knew that they had metal detectors. Once she found a parking place in a commercial lot about a block away, she did as she always did. She pulled the knife out of her boot and slid it under her seat. Since she was now carrying a gun, she removed the holstered weapon and hid it, along with the suppressor, under the back end of the floor mat in the passenger footwell, where it went under the seat. Going up the broad steps, she realized that she wasn't exactly dressed properly to see the assistant district attorney. Most of the other people going in and out were dressed in business suits, even though there were some messengers and lower-level workers who were dressed somewhat more casually. Angela had been on her way to work to tend bar, so she was wearing cutoffs and boots. Her attire earned her some inviting smiles from men and murderous looks from women. Inside was the usual entry to a public building, a large, bland chamber that echoed voices and footsteps. A small line had formed at the security checkpoint as people laid briefcases and purses in tubs on a table before going through the metal detector. Angela slipped her purse off her shoulder and slung it up into a gray plastic tub. She knew the routine from delivering documents to the prosecutors who had offices in the building. Once past security, she took the elevator up to the fourth floor. Down the hall, past people who paused to stare at her, she came to the office of the assistant district attorney. The receptionist was a thin young man with perfectly styled hair. His blue shirt, offset with a coral-colored tie, was too big for him. He asked if she had an appointment to see Mr. Babington. When she said no, he told her he was in a meeting and she would have to make an appointment and come back. She said she wanted to wait to see if he would have time to see her after his meeting. Annoyed, he asked her name. Angela told him that she was a courier and had delivered packages to Mr. Babington before. Pouting, he told her to have a seat. Just before 5 p.m., John Babington opened his office door to let out a couple of men. They hurried past him on their way out. He paused, putting on his suit coat. The guy at the front desk smirked his disapproval as he pointed at Angela.
I told her she would have to make an appointment, but she insisted on waiting.
John Babington stood frozen with one arm in the sleeve of his jacket, taking in her bare legs. There was no question in her mind that he remembered her. He pulled his suit coat back off and gestured with a tilt of his head for her to come into his office. Angela closed the door and then sat in one of the two maroon leather chairs in front of his wooden desk. He swung his coat over his taller chair behind the desk and sat down.
What can I do for you?
I'm Angela Constantine. He leaned back in his chair and with one hand slicked back his long, thick, dark brown hair.
What can I do for you, Ms. Constantine?
Four men tried to murder me. I was told you dropped the charges and let them go. I want to know why. Recognition showed in his eyes, and then he smiled to himself as if she were a child who had asked something naive.
It's not that simple.
Angela nested her hands in her lap. It is to me. They tried to murder me.
Didn't you say they raped you as well?
He leaned in with a hint of a smile, wanting to hear the juicy story. A simple yes was all she gave him. His extra chins oozed over his collar and tie as he tried to glance down at her legs, but she was too close to his desk for him to see much. So he took a long look at her chest instead before he shifted his attention to the stack of folders to the side. He fingered through them until he found the one he was looking for and then tugged it out. He dropped the folder on the desk in front of himself and then flipped it open. He turned over papers, reading, making small sounds in his throat. She saw the photocopied mugshots of the four men. He flipped those four pages over, then wet his thumb and picked up a page, studying it for a moment. He finally looked up over the top of the paper.
What exactly was it you wanted to know?
I told the officer who came to see me in the hospital that I was willing to testify against all four men. I can identify them. I gave the officers the license plate number. I want to know why you would drop the charges and let them go. He gave her a long, cold look.
Are you prejudiced, Ms. Constantine?
Angela blinked.
What?
John Babington gave her a haughty smirk.
They're undocumented Mexican immigrants, Ms. Constantine. This state has a policy of giving sanctuary to undocumented immigrants.
Angela leveled a glare back at him.
They tried to kill me.
The good people of New York State.
He lifted his arm to twirl his hand in the air over his head.
And all the elected officials above me have made it abundantly clear that this is to be a sanctuary state for undocumented aliens. That means we protect them. There are standing orders not to cooperate in any way with federal officials.
This isn't a federal case, Angela said, cutting him off. This is a criminal case. I don't want them deported. I want them prosecuted. With a finger, she pointed out the bruises around her neck. They hanged me and left me to die. They attempted to murder me. You're the one who is supposed to speak for victims and prosecute criminals. He stared at her throat a moment before looking up into her eyes.
Are you into Satanism, Ms. Constantine?
What?
Satanism. You know, devil worship.
He gestured toward her neck.
Your tattoo there, it says Dark Angel. Do you worship Satan?
Angela frowned her incredulity.
No. And even if I did, which I don't, what does that have to do with those men raping me and trying to kill me?
He briefly looked back at the paper he was holding and then looked up with icy contempt.
It says here that the men said the sex was consensual.
Angela stared in astonishment at the accusation. That's a lie.
Of course they're going to say it was consensual. They're trying to get out of going to jail for what they did. I suppose they also claimed that the attempted murder was actually assisted suicide?
He arched an eyebrow at her sarcasm before going back to silently reading the report in his hand.
I have the testimony of all four men saying the same thing, that it was consensual. They claim that you wanted to have an experience.
What are you talking about? What experience?
They all say that they met you at Barry's place, where you're a bartender. They say that after work, out in the parking lot, you got friendly with them and then told them that you had a rape fantasy. They say you asked them if they wanted to play along and help you have that kind of experience.
After work that night, Angela was busy killing Owen, but she could hardly say that. They put me in the hospital. He nodded as if he knew all about it.
They claim you wanted it to be rough sex so that, as they say, it would feel real to you. They say you told them beforehand that you wanted them to hang you by a rope and leave you so as to complete your fantasy. When they were reluctant to go that far, you told them not to worry, that you had a knife in your boot and you would cut yourself down.
Angela sat stunned. The men didn't know she had a knife when they'd left her there to die. That knife was only discovered by Officer Denton at the hospital. That could only mean that someone fed that information to the four men and helped them craft their statement, or crafted it for them. She realized that since the state's policy was to provide sanctuary to undocumented aliens, he needed to find an excuse to drop the charges and let the men go. So they fabricated a story to discredit Angela. He cocked his arm and pumped his fist as he gave her a knowing wink.
You enjoy a little gangbang now and then, Ms. Constantine? Is that it? A bit of hard, fast, and rough?
Angela could barely contain her rage, but she knew she had to. She knew her face was going red, but she couldn't stop that. I'm telling you what happened, she said, as calmly as she could. I'm the victim of a crime, of attempted murder. John Babington regarded her with an imperious expression.
I'm just letting you know the statement the four men gave. It certainly is at odds with what you say. Their account would come out in court, of course. There are four of them and one of you. Their side of it would be a sensation in the press. It would be all over the internet, with sympathy pouring in from all around the country for the poor, innocent, undocumented immigrants. You would be hounded as a bigot, a racist, and worse. That's why, in my view, I had to drop the charges. It protects everyone, including you.
They're criminals, she repeated.
I'm not a criminal.
He flipped over a few more pages.
Well, let's see. I have a report here that you were carrying a concealed weapon.
He looked up over the paper and arched an eyebrow.
Is that true?
Angela swallowed. She knew better than to lie. Yes. I carried a knife for self-defense. I was unaware it was illegal.
Ignorance before the law is no excuse, Ms. Constantine. You do realize, don't you, that because the officer found the weapon and seized it, we have the evidence needed to prosecute you for carrying a concealed weapon?
He gave her a threatening smile.
At the discretion of this office, of course.
Angela didn't say anything. She was getting the bigger picture. They intended to let the men go, period. He was letting her know that he would bring charges against her if she made a fuss about it. He would charge her with a crime and suggest that it hadn't been rape at all, but consensual sex. He would say that after the romp, she wanted to charge the men to cover up the true nature of her behavior and because she was a racist. His gaze went from her hair as far down as he could see.
It's rather self-evident that you were asking for it.
Right, he said to make a point of it.
I mean, why else would you dress the way you do? Anyone can see by looking at you that you're the kind of woman who is always looking to get laid, right?
The way I dress does not make it okay to rape me, He smiled as he winked at her.
Come on now. Tell the truth. You liked it.
Angela knew she was in a dangerous situation with a powerful man, the kind of situation with authorities she always tried to avoid. She simply said, "That's not true." He shrugged off her denial and flipped over the page.
It says here in this report that the officer who interviewed you at the hospital suspected that the incident might have been some kind of drug deal gone bad.
Angela blinked. I don't use drugs.
It doesn't matter what you say. It only matters what the jury believes.
He flipped over some more pages, mumbling a list of things under his breath as he read. He finally straightened the papers and laid them back down in the folder, then leaned back in his chair and locked his fingers behind his head. His big belly flopped out over his pants.
Despite what you say, young lady, the evidence shows that you are likely heavily involved in drugs. The Constantine residence, where you lived, has long been the scene of visits from the police for drug activity, including possession with the intent to distribute. Your place is well known to police. There have been fights there, stabbings,
and any number of arrests on various charges,
most of them having to do with drugs. All of that is very incriminating to a jury.
Angela did her best to control her voice. I don't do drugs. It didn't matter. She was guilty for the sins of her mother. Hands still laced behind his head, he shrugged.
All the people I prosecute for drug possession and for dealing say the same thing. They don't do drugs. They don't deal drugs. We have the wrong person. The police planted the drugs on them. All that kind of bull crap. You're all the same.
You would prosecute someone you know is innocent?
It's not up to me to say who is innocent and who is guilty. It's up to a jury to make that determination.
Angela stood, fists at her side. I don't have anything to do with drugs.
Well, what we're left with is the word of the police.
His gaze glided down to her cutoffs for a lingering look.
Against the word of a whore the cat dragged out of a trailer park.
His gaze came up to glare at her with cold contempt. By the way he kept looking at her body, Angela realized that he had something important in common with the four men. Like them, he thought he was better than her. More than that, he had an elitist disdain for her, and yet he couldn't help lusting for her. It left him with the confused emotion of hatred mixed with desire. Angela didn't say anything as she sat back down. He shrugged.
Maybe what we have here is a simple case of a woman dealing drugs and known to be carrying a concealed weapon.
He leaned forward, pointing at her with a pen he picked up off his desk as his voice got louder.
Like I said, we're a sanctuary state, and we are not going to unfairly prosecute undocumented aliens on the word of a fucking little trailer tramp.
With great effort, Angela kept her mouth shut.
So,
he said, his voice returning to normal levels.
I think that you should consider yourself fortunate that I'm not inclined to press concealed weapons charges against you. Don't you agree?
Angela swallowed back her anger. She knew she had to be very careful in her answer. This was not a battle she could win. Worse, she knew she would be in great peril if she said the wrong thing. Yes. I agree. His politician smile returned.
I'm so glad that I could explain it and learn that we see eye to eye about this whole matter.
There was an urgent knock at the door. When Babington looked up and called,
Yes?
The door opened just enough for the young man who had been at the front desk to stick his head in.
Can I have you for just a minute, Mr. Babington? A critical matter.
Babington shut the folder on his desk and rose.
Excuse me for a moment, Ms. Constantine.
He hiked up his pants as he went to the door. He leaned his head out, discussing something with the young man. Babington's side of the discussion sounded heated. Angela watched him a moment, watching as his ill humor revealed itself. Babington had one hand on the doorframe and the other on the edge of the door as he leaned his head out, asking pointed questions and giving angry orders. She couldn't see the young man. He had withered back under his boss's temper. Angela leaned in over his desk and lifted the cover of the folder, then the papers, until she found the four mug shots. She quickly snatched them out of the folder, folded them up, and stuffed them in a pocket. She closed the cover of the folder. When Babington finished talking to the young man and came back into the room, Angela lifted her purse off the other chair and put the strap over her shoulder. He gave her that lewd, condescending smile she had seen from him before. She returned a phony smile she sometimes had to use at the bar to avoid trouble with fragile male egos. "Thank you for your time, Mr. Babington," Angela said on her way past him.
"Any time, my dear," he called after her. "Any time."
30. Angela sat in her truck, gripping the steering wheel as if she were trying to strangle it, panting, her heart pounding as she stared down at nothing. She knew better than to go to the authorities. She knew better. She should have expected it. When she heard that the charges had been dropped and the men released, she should have known that the fix was already in and there was nothing she could do about it. The system always blamed the victim. She remembered something her grandfather told her that day on the way home after he had come to her school. Principal Erickson had been about to expel her for fighting back against those bigger girls who had attacked her. She wasn't expelled, but only because Principal Erickson was more afraid of her grandfather than of any criticism for not expelling her. In the car on the way home, her grandfather had told her that every form of authority, from the school system to the justice system, was far more concerned about protecting itself than the innocent. He said that was why he was proud of her for standing up for herself. He said that was the only true way to ensure justice. He had been right. The prosecutor's office didn't care about justice. Like all forms of authority, from the smallest to the largest, they only cared about protecting themselves and their political agenda. It was always dangerous to go against what had already been decided by the authorities. People like Angela were a petty annoyance, a minor obstacle to their ends. If need be, the system would crush them if they got in the way. Angela, though, cared about justice. It was all she really cared about. Vengeance was the only thing that made her feel alive. It was the only thing worth living for. In a way, Angela was glad the self-centered prick had let the four men go. It meant that Angela could hunt them. Although the men had been let go because they were undocumented Mexican immigrants, Angela didn't really believe that the four men were Mexican. She didn't think Mexicans talked the way these men talked, or thought the way these men thought. She didn't think Mexicans thought of America as the great Satan. She knew who did. She could see it in their eyes that they genuinely despised America. They radiated a visceral hatred. They were going to kill her, so they had nothing to hide. She also didn't think the things she saw in that room were parts for irrigation systems. Irrigation systems didn't use cell phones or piles of machined geometric-shaped parts or wires that came in by courier. The four men weren't who they pretended to be. They were up to something. She briefly considered calling the authorities, the FBI or Homeland Security, and reporting what she'd seen. But with John Babington's accusations still burning hot in her mind, and seeing how laws created by lawyers protected criminals, not victims, she dismissed the thought. Everyone would accuse her of being a racist who hated the men because they were Mexican. If she reported them, the most likely outcome would be that she would be the one who got in trouble. They would check with Babington about the men. He would brush off the accusations, and then he would likely charge her with carrying a concealed weapon. More frightening,
He would come up with a large quantity of drugs and charge her with dealing. It was easy for a man like that to put someone like Angela in jail, where she would be silenced and forgotten. She repeated her rule to herself. No good could ever come of talking to the authorities or trusting in them, whoever those authorities might be. Angela picked up her phone and called Barry. He answered on the second ring. Barry, it's Angela. Would it be all right if I didn't come in tonight?
What's up?
It's nothing.
It's something. I can hear it in your voice. What's wrong?
Angela cleared her throat. I just found out that the charges against the four men who attacked me have been dropped.
What? That doesn't make any sense. How in the world could that happen? Who dropped the charges?
The assistant district attorney, John Babington. Barry huffed the name.
Figures. Do you know that when Babington was running for office, he came by the bar and asked for a campaign contribution?
No, you never told me.
Well, he did. He said that it would be nice if I could help with a contribution to his campaign, you know, to continue his strong record on law and order. He said that it would be a good idea to help him get elected because if he lost, before the new man was sworn into office, there are always a lot of pending charges against bars that came across the desk of the assistant district attorney, and he might finally have to pursue them all as a last duty to the people of the state. I told him that I didn't know anything about election campaigns, and I asked what the suggested amount of a contribution would be. Do you know what that asshole said?
No. What did he say?
He said that the suggested contribution was $1,500. $1,500!
So you made a contribution to his campaign?
Damn right I did. I know a shakedown when I hear one. Sometimes, even when you know it's not fair, you gotta do what's right for you. Know what I mean?
Angela's grip on the steering wheel had her knuckles white. Yeah, I sure do. He paused a moment.
I'm sorry, Angela, talking about my petty shakedown. That's nothing like what the fucking asshole did to you. Listen, it's not that busy. Take the night off. In fact, take the rest of the week off. This must be rattling you. Hell, it has me fuming, and it didn't even happen to me.
Thanks for understanding, Barry. I'll call you in a few days and see what the schedule looks like. When she hung up, she called the missed number that had called half a dozen times.
Hello, this is Betty with Hospice Services, a woman on the other end of the line said.
Hi, Betty. This is Angela Constantine.
Angela, I've been trying to reach you.
I know. Something happened.
What could have happened that you wouldn't...
I was attacked by four men. They raped me, beat me, and left me for dead. I've been in the hospital, recovering. Her heated tone turned to apologetic shock.
Oh, my God. I had no idea. Are you all right? I'm so sorry that I've been calling you so often.
Don't worry about it. Listen, Betty, the reason I'm calling is I need to know something from my mother. There was a momentary pause.
Well, it's getting difficult, you know? She's in and out. She doesn't seem to be able to process talking on the phone anymore.
That's fine. I don't expect her to be able to talk on the phone. I just need you to ask her something for me. It's important. I need the last name of a guy who used to come around our house. His first name was Nate. I need to know his last name. It was foreign-sounding, and I can't remember it. Ma should remember him. She always said he was cute, and she wanted to pinch his ass. He came around our house for a while until he went to prison for manslaughter.
Nate went to prison for manslaughter. That's terrible. Okay, hold on and I'll ask.
She was gone for quite a while. At last, she returned to the phone.
It was difficult. She has a hard time, you know.
I know.
But she remembered him. His name is Nate Drenovich.
Angela snapped her fingers. That's it. That's the guy. Thank you, Betty. I'm sorry, but I have to go for now. Half the time, with the medication, I don't know what she means, but she does ask for you. Just now, she asked something kind of strange.
What did she ask?
She asked me just now if it was the girl in the moon. It was kind of strange. Eerie, you know?
Angela didn't know what to say.
When will you be able to come see her?
Soon, Angela said. I have to take care of some things first.
I understand. You take care of yourself, dear, and get better. Do you hear me? Get better.
I will. Thank you, Betty. 31. Once she hung up, Angela started doing a search on her phone for the name Nate Drenovich. Surprisingly, there were a number of entries, but they were in other cities. Then she found one in Milford Falls. Drenovich Tactical. Under the name, it said, Combat Martial Arts. From what she remembered of him, that sounded like the same guy. Angela knew roughly where the address was located. She replaced the knife in her right boot, the suppressor in the other boot, and the gun inside her waistband at the small of her back. It was uncomfortable leaning back in the seat of the truck with the gun there. She reminded herself that the gun was not meant to be comfortable. It was meant to be comforting. She felt safer having the gun on her rather than left in the truck where it had been useless to her when she had needed it most, all because she had been following the law. But she knew that even having a gun wasn't the whole solution. She found Drenovich Tactical in a seedy strip mall set back from a busy four-lane street. She didn't know if Nate would remember her. She'd been 15, maybe nearing 16 at the time. She didn't know if he was still into drugs, but since he had a business, she was hoping not. If he was, she would simply find someone else. With all the scary men at her mother's place, she had thought he was one of the more decent guys who hung around the trailer. But he wouldn't have hung around unless he did drugs or ran with people who did. At the least, though, he hung around with the wrong crowd. There was also the matter of his manslaughter conviction. That worried her. She wondered what she might be walking into. At the moment, though, he was the only one she could think of for what she needed. At least it was a place to start. If she didn't like what she found, she could always walk. Angela parked in front of the storefront window painted black from the inside with the name Drenovich Tactical in gold lettering outlined in red. Because the window was painted over, there was no way to see what might be inside. She opened the typical strip mall aluminum and glass door, which was also painted over in black. Inside, the place was basically all one open room. While not big, it looked like plenty of space for martial arts training. The bottom 6 feet of the walls were painted black, with a red band above the black running around the room, and white the rest of the way up to a high ceiling with exposed ductwork and vents. There looked to be a bathroom in back, and there was a desk with a few folding chairs up against the blacked-out window in front. Wooden benches lined one wall. Most of the room was covered with mats. Two men were practicing some sort of arm locks and escapes in the center of the room. One of them pretty much fit her memory of Nate. The other was older, more muscular, with a buzz cut, a wife-beater undershirt, and lots of tattoos upon tattoos upon tattoos. He was doing the kind of steroid-induced sniffing and shoulder twitching that made her wonder if she'd made a mistake coming into the place. The guy was clearly amped up. His eyes were bugged out. From lots of experience at quickly judging men as she had been growing up, she knew that he was trouble. Both men disengaged from grappling and came over to Angela. Nate was a ruggedly good-looking guy, at most maybe 5 or 6 years older than her. He had short brown hair that was pleasing in its disorder. The tight, black, short-sleeved t-shirt he had on showed that he was ripped, but not muscle-bound, like the other guy.
Hey, Hot stuff,
the tattooed guy said as he circled in close beside her. He aggressively grabbed her ass cheek.
Nice.
In an instant, Angela had the barrel of her gun pressed up under his chin, lifting his head back a few inches. He froze. Did you hear that click? She asked.
Yeah.
That was the safety coming off. I've had a very bad day, and I'm in a really, really bad mood. Right now, I'd like nothing more than an excuse to pull the trigger. If you so much as fantasize about touching me again, I'm going to send a bullet ricocheting around the inside of your thick cranium. Do you know what cranium means, dumb fuck? Her tone of voice turned him cautious.
Yeah, I know.
What? What cranium means, or that you're a dumb fuck? He didn't seem to know what she wanted him to say.
All right, Malcolm, Nate said. Listen to me. I know what's going through your head right now, and believe me, you're just starting, and you haven't had enough lessons yet to even think of trying to disarm this pissed-off young lady before she could pull the trigger.
Nate gently put his fingers on Angela's forearm.
It's all right. I swear, I won't let him touch you again. So why don't you put the gun away?
Angela glanced at his eyes. They were calm and confident. She put the safety back on as she pulled the gun from under Malcolm's chin. She slipped the weapon back into its holster. Nate put a hand against Malcolm's sweaty shoulder, right over a tattooed nuclear radiation symbol, backing him away a few steps.
I think we should call it a day. We'll pick it up from there next week.
He pointed a thumb toward the door.
See you then.
Malcolm frowned in confusion at what had just happened and his quick dismissal. His bug eyes twitched back and forth between Nate and Angela.
Fucking little cunt, he finally said.
Angela glared at him. Sticks and stones.
All right, that's enough, Nate told Malcolm as he started forward. You know that one of the things I teach is when to walk away. This is one of those times. You don't need to prove that you can beat up a 115-pound girl. You've made your point. I'll see you next week.
Malcolm looked between them once more, and then finally snatched his shirt off the back of a chair. With the shirt clutched in his fist, he stormed out the door. When she looked back, Nate had a puzzled frown as he stared at her.
Do I know you? You look familiar.
She could see in his eyes that he was a killer. But in some mystifying way, it was different from the eyes of every killer she'd ever seen before. Looking into his eyes brought on that same primal, bone-chilling fear of a predator, but at the same time, there wasn't the vicious quality to go with it. She also didn't have any visions of him killing, only vague shadows, fighting. It was oddly disorienting, because it was alarming. But at the same time, calming. Kind of. I'm Angela Constantine, Sally's daughter. You used to come around to the parties at our trailer. He snapped his fingers. A pleasant smile spread across his features as he pointed at her.
Right. Sally's daughter.
He gave her a quick look down and back up.
Damn, girl. When you grew up, you did it right.
She was not in the mood for flattery. Are you still doing drugs? The question momentarily threw him off. He recovered quickly.
Nah, he said with a dismissive gesture rather than get defensive. That was a phase. I was hanging out with the wrong crowd.
In my experience, people who say that are the wrong crowd. He turned a little more serious.
If you really must know, it had to do with a girl named Becky that I thought I was in love with at the time. I would have walked off a cliff if she asked me to. I was young and stupid back then.
He waved off the subject.
So, what brings you here?
I'm interested in learning some self-defense. He smiled as he shook his head.
Are you sure that you need it? You're pretty damn fast with that gun.
Angela didn't return the smile. Guns can't always save you. Sometimes you don't have a gun when you need it most. Even if you do, you might not be able to get to it fast enough. Even worse, some people know how to take a gun away from you before you can use it to save yourself. Sometimes you simply get overpowered. He turned more serious when he saw that she wasn't smiling.
You're right. Not Malcolm, not yet anyway. But there are people who can take a gun away from you before you know what happened, and then you're in a whole lot of trouble. If it's a bad guy, you're dead.
Angela studied his eyes for a moment. You went to prison for killing a guy. Why did you kill him? He lifted a hand as if in defense.
Whoa, there. What kind of question is that?
The kind of question I have to ask before I agree to let you teach me anything.
Before you agree?
He planted his fists on his hips.
What if I don't want you as a student?
Then I'll find someone else. I started with you because I always thought you were a decent guy, despite the people you were hanging out with. I'm a pretty good judge of character. I wanted to come to you first because I thought you would remember me and might be willing to help me.
I see.
So why did you kill a man? He chewed his bottom lip as he stared off for a moment, apparently considering if he wanted to answer her. Finally, he looked back at her.
Becky, that girl I told you I was in love with, discovered meth. She was getting wasted on it more and more often. Whenever I asked her to stop, she would call me a chicken shit loser. So, for a while, I went along with it. I didn't want her to dump me, so I smoked pot when she did meth, or when we partied. At your house, when she smoked crack and I would smoke weed, I was trying to fit into her world and be part of her life. But I finally grew up enough to realize that I deserved better, so I told Becky we were through, and I quit seeing her. Quit cold turkey. It hurt. And at the same time, it was a relief, you know? Anyway, she was royally pissed. Becky was damn good-looking, and no one had ever dumped her before. She didn't like it. She wanted revenge. She told this other guy, a guy she was two-timing me with but I hadn't known about, that I beat her up all the time, so she'd left me for him. The guy was always getting wired on angel dust. One night, he came looking for me to avenge the damsel. He caught me leaving a convenience store. I told him he could have Becky with my blessings, but the guy wouldn't listen to anything I said. I didn't want to fight him. He wasn't having it, and he got really pissed when I simply kept him off me and wouldn't fight him. Then he came at me with a knife. I could tell by his eyes that he was flying on angel dust and that he was serious about intending to kill me. He was a big guy, and he kept swinging that knife at me. I tried to hurt him enough to make him stop, but he was so high on PCP that he wasn't feeling any pain. Finally, when he lunged at me, I put him down hard to buy me enough time to leave. The thing is, when I flipped him down on the ground, he landed on the stub of a signpost that had been broken off by a car. It was a freak thing. It severed his spine at the base of his skull and killed him instantly.
When Angela had lived at home, there were people who did supergrass, marijuana combined with PCP. She knew how much it messed people up. The ones who did straight PCP called it rocket fuel. It made them behave like they were insane. Angela hid from them. That sounds like self-defense to me. Nate lifted his arms in frustrated agreement.
It was. I was going to be cleared of any wrongdoing. But then this fucking asshole of a prosecutor came across the case. He was running for re-election at the time, and he wanted to look tough on crime. He wanted a murder case to puff himself up to voters. He had a dead guy and me. So he said it was a love triangle and charged me with second-degree murder. He got that bitch Becky to testify against me. She loved that. She wanted revenge for me dumping her. Fortunately, the jury didn't entirely believe her, and they convicted me of the lesser charge of manslaughter. I served a little over 2 years. So, there it is. That's how I ended